This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. Lawyers for a woman accusing U.S. High Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her 3 decades ago say she wants to testify next week before a Senate panel. AP's Sagar Magani has a report.
In an email to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Christine Blasey Ford's lawyer says her client wants to testify next week if a deal can be reached on terms that are fair and ensure her safety. It's a sharp switch from statements this week in which Ford and her lawyers insisted she would only testify after the FBI investigated her allegations, which put the hearing in doubt. The lawyer says Ford still strongly prefers an investigation, but stop short of demanding it. There is at least one obstacle to overcome, the hearing scheduled for Monday, which the lawyer says is not possible. Sagar Magani at the White House.
At least 44 people have drowned after a passenger ferry capsized on Lake Victoria in Tanzania. Officials say they expect that death toll to rise as the search gets underway. Regional Commissioner John Magella said 37 people have been rescued, but they were in bad condition. World Anti-Doping Agency has announced it will lift its ban on Russia's anti-doping agency. The decision to lift the ban drew ire from many, including U.S. Anti-Doping Agency CEO Travis Tigert.
And we have to move forward with reform to ensure that whether it's a new organization, whether it's a change in leadership, whether it's a change in governance structure, that the global watchdog truly becomes that and not one that's going to turn its back on clean athletes.
Russia's anti-doping agency was banned in 2015 from the WADA report found evidence of a large and sophisticated government-backed scheme to help athletes cheat on drug tests. Moscow denies that. This is VOA News. UN Secretary General says the success of intra-Korean talks rests on what happens between the United States and North Korea. AP's Warren Levinson reporting.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the summit between the two Koreas made some progress, but real progress awaits the success of talks between Washington and Pyongyang to eliminate the nuclear threat. There will not be success in intra-Korean negotiations, Guterres said.
If simultaneously there is not success in the American-North Korean or the Democratic People's Republic of Korea negotiations.
U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley announced that during the General Assembly session that starts next week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will chair a foreign ministers' meeting of the Security Council devoted to North Korea and its nuclear program. Warren Levinson, New York.
United States prepare to go on the offensive in cyberspace to ensure adversaries know there is a price to pay for hacks, network intrusions, and types of attacks. President Trump signed a new national cyber strategy calling for a more aggressive response to the growing online threat posed by other countries, terrorist groups, and criminal organizations. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says America's enemies need to know it will not be on the defensive anymore.
We're going to do a lot of things offensively, and I think our adversaries need to know that. Some of the things we may well be in a position to talk about publicly. Others we may well not be in a position to. So I wouldn't want to prejudice that. I just think it's important for people to understand that we're not just on defense, as we have been primarily on defense for a period of time.
The new strategy comes less than 2 months before the U.S. midterm elections on November 6th. Key security intelligence officials have amplified their warnings that Russia and other adversaries like China, Iran, and North Korea may seek to use cyber means to interfere with those elections. A U.S. federal court has indicted the son of a former president of Guinea and his wife for allegedly enslaving a young Guinean girl in their luxurious home in the U.S. city of Dallas, Texas, for 16 years. Mohamed Touré and Denicro Touré were charged with forced labor and harboring an alien for financial gain. Their attorney said the government's case is riddled with salacious allegations, fabrications, and lies. Neighbors helped that girl escape in 2016. Torres face up to 30 years in prison and a $500,000 fine if convicted. International Human Rights Watchdog Group has accused Nicolas Maduro's government of committing some of the worst human rights violations in Venezuela's history. Amnesty International says the number of murders in Venezuela greater than in many countries who are at war. This is VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda Member of Parliament Bobby Wine returned home Thursday to a rousing welcome amid tight security.
Is it within the Constitution that we shouldn't welcome our comrades wherever they come from? I'm just wondering why the state is panicking.
That's one of Bobby Wine's supporters. A row in Kenya's parliament over a controversial tax bill. The former governor of the Central Bank of Liberia has given new information about how 16 billion Liberian dollars were brought into the country. South Sudan's new ambassador to the United States presents his letters of credence. And religious leaders in Cameroon accuse the diaspora of fueling the crisis in the country.
We call on the diaspora to stop the hate speech communication that promotes violence, suspicion, and fear among the people of Cameroon. We call on the diaspora to participate in the political process of Cameroon using democratic and non-violent means.
The Reverend Gusta Ibai is spokesperson for the Council of Protestant Churches in Cameroon. And Algeria has purged the military and police commanders ahead of the 2019 presidential election. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda Member of Parliament Robert Chagulain, popularly known as Bobby Wine, returned home Thursday to a rousing welcome amid tight security. The police denied earlier reports that Bobby Wine had been arrested. The Uganda Monitor newspaper reports that the posters of Bobby Wine sold like a hot cake for as much as 10,000 Kenyan shillings, about $99 for a medium-sized poster. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda police spokesperson Emilian Kaima released a statement indicating Chagulanyi was safely home. Kaima said police had provided the legislator with transport, escort and a lead car to his home in Magere. Earlier, police and the army were heavily deployed along the road leading to Entebbe International Airport to prevent crowds from forming. A Ugandan government spokesperson told VOA that tight security was needed because Wine supporters are violent. A number of politicians and journalists were stopped at roadblocks mounted at Kajansi, about 15 kilometers away from the airport. Those who insisted were arrested and briefly put behind bars. Alexis Agala is a journalist with Uganda's Daily Monitor newspaper.
I got lucky that there was someone I knew who told me to go back peacefully. Otherwise, I think it would have been something more than that. Yeah, so I had to stop and wait for my friends to come and join me from here in Kajansi.
International and local media say members of his band and his manager were arrested before his arrival. Although police had issued guidelines allowing Bobby Wine's close family members at the airport, his elder brother was barred. Paul Sentamu is one of Chagulanyi's brothers.
I was going to welcome my brother, but I had other news that my big brother, Eddie Owe, has been arrested. So what should I expect if I go there? For now, I'm waiting for my brother here because I cannot go anywhere because they've deployed.
Medad Segona is a Ugandan legislator and Bobby Wine's lawyer. He expressed disappointment over what he called the militarization of Ugandan affairs.
We can resolve our political differences without involving the security forces. The more we involve security forces in the politics of our country, the more we risk the country, the more we risk our children. I am now angry that you can take my country to be a military barracks simply because one member of parliament is coming back, you know, from a trip where you forced him to go for treatment. Then the rest of us must be prisoners in our country. It's a shame.
Semakula Lutamaguzi is another Ugandan legislator. He said that heavy security deployment infringes on Ugandans' enjoyment of their constitutional rights.
Is it within the Constitution that we shouldn't welcome our comrades wherever they come from? So I'm just wondering why the state is panicking. But as a country, I know we have freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and shouldn't limit our colleagues, especially citizens of this country, from expressing their wishes, especially when they are doing it in a democratic manner.
The popular singer has been in the United States for medical attention over what he says was torture he was subjected to while he was in custody. In public appearances in the U.S., he has appeared badly injured. He and 33 others, including four legislators, are facing treason charges for allegedly pelting President Yoweri Museveni's convoy during campaigning in Uganda's Arua district. He is out of prison on bail, but will return to court on 1st October. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
There was drama yesterday, Thursday, in Kenya's National Assembly after members differed during a debate of an amendment to President Uhuru Kenyatta's 2018-2019 budget. Some members disagree with the manner in which the vote on the introduction of the fuel tax was conducted. The controversial finance bill did pass, and as Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenyans will now pay more to meet their basic needs.
Kenya's parliament turned messy yesterday, Thursday, after members clashed following disagreement over an adjustment in a bill proposed by President Uhuru Kenyatta. MPs opposed to the bill described National Assembly Speaker Justin Muturi as a rebel. They vowed to go to court to stop the bill before it can be signed into law.
This is how a dictatorship enters the country. Muturi is a letdown and is a shame to the house. And in Duale, the leadership, the entire leadership of the house is a shame. And as members of Goodwill who are supporting the Kenyans, Kenyans who are overburdened, we have purpose that tomorrow we shall be going to courts. But I want to assure you Kenyans, if we don't arise, my friend, the nation is going in the wrong direction.
The speaker himself has threatened me on the floor of the house. He said if it was happening outside parliament, he would fight me fiscally. I want to tell him it has started now.
The protest in parliament accelerated, and when the vote was called, it was chaotic as the Information, Communication and Technology Department's figures read 352, more than the exact number of members in parliament, which is 349. It was clear after the vote that those opposed were not happy with the count.
Some are celebrating, some are out, some are in the toilet. They purported to do a vote. And if you looked at the electronic system, Mr. Speaker, it even showed we were more than the actual numbers that are even legal.
Under members,
we needed to be counted as members of parliament before a vote is called on, which was not done. But according to the numbers which are in house, we are more than 233.
A second vote was ordered after the number of MPs in the house during the first vote was disputed. The members blamed President Uhuru Kenyatta and NASA leader Raila Odinga for interfering with the matters of the National Assembly. They accused them of inciting members to vote for the newly introduced tax on petroleum products, betting companies, housing, among others.
I want to confirm to the public and the nation today, what happened this afternoon in this house, it is the most darkest day of legislation in this country.
However, Majority Leader Adan Duale said the petroleum tax was for the good of the country so that government will be able to fund the development project for the 2018-2019 fiscal year, as Kenyans are now required to pay for 8% value-added tax on the petroleum products, 1.5% on housing, and 15% tax will come from betting companies. President Kenyatta says the taxes will enable Kenya to fund a big four development agenda, which are manufacturing, universal health care, affordable housing, and food security. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 21st. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. The former governor of the Central Bank of Liberia has been providing new information about how 16 billion Liberian dollars were brought into the country. There's been a controversy whether the money was ordered by the government of then-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf before she left office in early 2018, or by the government of President George Weah. Former Central Bank of Liberia Governor Milton Weeks called a late news conference Thursday night to explain.
The story started that there was a missing container of currency. I have said constantly that I am not aware of any missing container of currency. To my knowledge, there is no missing container of currency. I want that to be clear. The second thing now that is being harped on is authorization for the money that was printed. I wish to state emphatically clear that we did obtain authorization before printing currency. The first authorization was in 2016 for the $5 billion, and the second authorization was in 2017 for the $10 billion we printed. That authorization came from the legislature. But in addition to the legislature, even before the legislature, the Board of Governors acted on the strength of the authorization from the legislature for us to also get approval from my board for all of the printing. It was never a unilateral one-man decision. The second point I want to make regards the period that we're talking about, that money came into the country. There are all sorts of insinuations that money came in this year totaling some exorbitant amount of money. The fact of the matter is that we printed $5 billion in 2016 and that came in 2016. In 2017, we signed an agreement and we printed an additional $10 billion. That is all the money I'm aware of that was printed. No more than that. The $10 billion that is being talked about, that money came in between October of 2017 and up to sometime early in 2018.
Former Central Bank of Liberia Governor Milton Weeks speaking during a news conference last night in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. The new South Sudan ambassador to the United States says he was received warmly by officials from the U.S. State Department. Philip Dada Natana told viewers South Sudan in Focus program Thursday he wants to repair the damaged relations between Washington and Juba.
I told him I had the honor of presenting my credentials as the South Sudan ambassador to the United States of America. And he said, welcome on board. I didn't hear you well. What country did you say that again? I said, South Sudan. And he said, oh, great country, beautiful country. And I hope that I will be able to work with you, you know. So he has been very nice. I was with my spouse. And so and overall, it was just a few, maybe a minute and 15 seconds, but it went pretty well.
The American people worked very, very much with the people of South Sudan during your difficult times. I mean, this is not new to someone like you who has been part of the struggle to independence. And now some of your officials have turned their guns on the United States. Information Minister Michael McQuay has been on record saying U.S. wants to topple the government of President Kiir. Why would you accuse the U.S. of trying to topple your government?
Well, I think the statement that you actually quoted now is from a senior official from the South Sudan, an information minister. As a politician, you know, I think he's at liberty to make statements. And as you know, as an ambassador, you know, I'm a civil servant, you know. So I think my role is to defend the interests of the government, that's first, but also to promote our relationship with the host country. So I will not be in liberty to comment on the statement made by Minister McQuay.
Let's look at what is happening in South Sudan. The reports that we get from South Sudan are not very encouraging right after the warring parties sign a peace agreement. What is happening in Kajukeji? Who is fighting who?
You know, with even our previous agreement during the CPA and when that agreement was welcomed by everybody, we went to Khartoum and we became part of the government. And even when we were in Juba, there were attacks, not actually in very far-fetched places, but in places like Sherikard and all of these kind of things. So I think we don't expect that this agreement is going to act like a magic stick, that once you strike it, and then it's all going to be very peaceful. There are going to be people who would want to spoil. There would want people who would want to say, you know, this agreement doesn't address us, and they will come. And I think the best thing to look at now is really to look at the enforcement mechanism that should be put in place. And I think if the region, and IGAD especially, is really keen that this agreement should actually hold, then I think they should speed up with deploying the monitors on the ground so that we hold people who violate this ceasefire agreement accountable and with punitive measures that has been put into place.
Philip Jada Natana is South Sudan's new ambassador to the United States. He spoke in Washington with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. A number of top Algerian military commanders, including heads of the Air Force and the Army, have been dismissed within the past week in a series of at least a dozen top officers who have been replaced since June. Analysts say that a core of military officers under the Deputy Defense Minister are consolidating their power ahead of the 2019 presidential elections. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
Algerian state TV announced the ouster of a number of top military commanders earlier this week, including the country's Air Force chief and the Army's head of ground operations. One top officer fled to Paris with his family through Algiers International Airport, prompting the firing of top airport security personnel. A former Algerian diplomat, Mohamed Zaitout, told an Egyptian TV station the firings were part of an extremely ugly power struggle in which top generals are firing, deposing, or arresting each other while some are trying to flee the country. Former military officers have had their passports canceled and are not being allowed to travel. Hilal Kashan, who teaches political science at the American University of Beirut, termed the purges a preemptive coup, while Mohamed Zaitout called them unprecedented, except for countries that have undergone regime change or a coup. President Abdelaziz Bouteflika is running for a fifth term this coming spring, despite poor health, and Kashan says those who support him are using him as a figurehead behind which to govern.
There is an agreement among the power elite in Algeria to keep Bouteflika in office because they run the country since he is incapacitated, and they hide behind him, and that gives them a sense of legitimacy. The fear is that if Bouteflika is gone, Algeria would be gravely destabilized.
Mohamed Bashouche, who teaches political science at the University of Algiers, told Al Hora TV he thinks the current turmoil in Algeria is nevertheless part of an agreement between civilian and military leaders. He says it is obvious the changes taking place in the military are directly related to preparations for the upcoming presidential elections. And despite the conflict between opposing sides, both the political and military wings of the presidency have come to a consensus over a roadmap to follow. Prime Minister Ahmed Ouyahia told a press conference earlier this week during the visit of German Chancellor Angela Merkel that despite turmoil, Algeria has a free press and everyone is allowed to speak out.
Je vous invite, parlant de liberté d'expression, à voir ce qu'écrit.
He says freedom of expression is an integral part of the Algerian press and its 160 newspapers, and no one is penalized for what they write about the president, the prime minister, or the institutions of state. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Muslim and Christian clerics and leaders of all major denominations in Cameroon have jointly accused Cameroonians in the diaspora of funding the crisis that has rocked the English-speaking regions of the country for 2 years. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Nous, leaders religieux du Cameroun, prions Allah.
This is the voice of Sheikh Umaru Malam, president of the Islamic Superior Council of Cameroon, speaking to a group of Christians and Muslims gathered at the Yaoundé headquarters of the Episcopal Conference of Cameroon Bishops. He says that as peace builders, Christians and Muslims should not be indifferent to the carnage that has been going on in the northwest and southwest regions of the Central African state. Sheikh Umaru says the council he leads decided to come up with a joint declaration with Christians because, he says, everyone in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions has been affected by the crisis. Reverend Gustave Ebai, a spokesman of the Council of Protestant Churches of Cameroon, SEPCA, read the declaration in which clerics accused Cameroonians living outside of their country of fueling the crisis.
We call on the diaspora to stop the hate speech communication that promotes violence, suspicion, and fear among the people of Cameroon. We call on the diaspora to participate in the political process of Cameroon using democratic and non-violent means. We call on the diaspora to respect the sacredness of human life and children's right to education. They should put an end to the trivialization of human dignity and the hostage-taking of schools.
Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Exposing here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the latest football rankings of teams released on Thursday by world governing body FIFA. Tunisia became the outright top-ranked African football nation after they shared first place with Senegal last month, but the 2-0 African Cup of Nations qualifying win in Eswatini lifted them one place in the world to number 23. Senegal dropped one position to second in Africa and 25th in the world. Among the Africa top 10, four-time Cup of Nations title holders, Ghana, were the biggest losers, slipping three places to seventh after a 1-0 away defeat by Kenya. Kenya, on the other hand, who followed up the Cup of Nations victory over Ghana with a friendly win against Malawi, lie 27th in Africa. Cape Verde dropped out of the top 10 after drawing 1-1 in Loli, Lesotho, and were replaced by record seven-time African champions Egypt, who thrashed Niger 6-0 this month. And now to the CAF Champions League. TP Mazembe will welcome CD Primeiro de Agosto in the 2018 CAF Champions League quarterfinal later today at the Start TP Mazembe in Lubumbashi. The first leg ended in a goalless stalemate. The winner on aggregate will take on either Tunisian champions Esperance de Tunis and Tunisian side Etoile du Sahel in the semifinals. In the older games, Al Ahly will start as favourites to seal a semifinal spot when they host Horoya at the Al Salam Stadium in Cairo on Saturday. In Tunisia, Etoile du Sahel will welcome Tunisian rivals Esperance de Tunis for their second-leg quarterfinal clash at the Stade Olympique de Souz. Staying with football news, President of the Nigerian Football Federation, Amaju Pinnick, has been re-elected to serve another four-year term. Amaju Pinnick pulled a total of 34 votes to beat three other contestants to retain his seat.
We just need to do what we need to do. You know, first of the things I want to do is to initiate reforms for our statute, you know, and that's why ISU is going to put all his expertise to play in ensuring that we start immediately. There are some things we need to capture in the statute that will reflect reconciliation, true reconciliation, and we have to do it right away.
Uganda and South Africa will face off in two closing fixtures of the FISU World University Netball Championships that started at the Makerere University Arena earlier this week. One game will be to complete the Seven Nations round-robin format of the competition and the other a grand final between the first two nations in the tournament, which are South Africa and Uganda. Team captain Irene Ayaru shares her thought on the tournament.
I know South African team is much more speedier than us. So like whenever they're going to be playing a speed game, so for us we shall be playing the opposite team. Because you cannot play a speed game with a speedy team. So that's the only advice I will give to my players too.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Have a good weekend, Africa. I'm James Botte in Washington.
The World Health Organization says nearly 800,000 people take their own lives every year. Hello, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Join VOA Health reporter Carol Pearson and me for the next edition of Press Conference USA when we talk with a mental health expert about why people take their own lives and what can be done to help someone who is contemplating such a tragic act. Listen to Press Conference USA Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the 2018 UN General Assembly. The theme of this year's debate, making the UN relevant to all people. Discussing the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.